Welcome to the McGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and joining me is James.
Take this more seriously.
You take it more seriously.
You're the one laughing.
Okay. Earlier this week, we released a podcast about Michael Clayton. Okay, great. Great talk. So yeah, check that out. Also check out our previous podcasts about Dirty Harry, Brad Pitt, Moneyball.
Don't blow.
Michael Clayton's better than Moneyball. I lost my train of thought. Jay-Z. We talked about the NBA Finals a while back. I either wrote recently.
Hot off the press.
Yeah, hot off the presses. New sports news, guys. The Miami Heat have won. But yeah, we're just going to... I'm just keeping up our week of train wreck intros. So yeah, let's just get to the theme song after you follow us on Twitter at The McGuffin Man.
Welcome to The MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Gone Baby Gone, the feel-good movie of 2007. And now, here are Alex and James.
And we're back. What are we talking about today, James?
Gone Baby Gone.
Okay.
The 2007 film by the brothers Affleck.
I believe it's on Netflix Instant.
Pardon?
I believe it's on Netflix Instant.
Yes. Yeah. Gone Baby Gone. Yeah. Directed by Ben, but starring Casey Affleck.
Yes. Correct facts. The fact-checking department has approved this.
Ben Affleck's directorial debut.
Yep.
First off, movies with their title in the dialogue, how do you feel?
I don't know. I always think it always takes you out of the movie slightly when it's said, right? For that reason, I guess I don't like it, but I don't have any sort of passionate stance on the topic.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you? Because I know you brought this up before.
It seems like something that would bother you way more, but everything bothers you way more.
Well, yes. I'm much more precious than you.
All right.
But it's only because I'm better than you, so it's
fine. Yeah. Let's talk about Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah.
Which is a feel-good child abduction movie.
The feel-good childhood abduction movie of the year. Okay. Now we've got that out of the way.
No, it's not really a feel-good movie. No. But it is about child abduction.
It is, yes.
And since it's directed by Ben Affleck, it is taking place in Boston.
Yes.
And it is working class.
Yes. You know how Boston this movie is? I saw it for the first time 6 years ago and only recently figured out there's a Wahlberg brother in it. That's how Boston it is. They somehow hit a Wahlberg on us.
They surround it with so much Boston.
Yeah, that you just missed the Wahlberg.
Yeah, the accents are fun. Outside of that, though, I love the way almost everyone talks in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like a foreign exchange student. Got life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the bartender, Big Dave or whatever, talking about I'm not the one. He says so many, like, hilariously cliched things. Like, oh, you think you're better than me? And don't step to me. I'm not the fucking one or whatever. It's just yeah, but anyway.
And Dottie.
Yes.
The friend.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think she was also in The Fighter, another movie.
Yeah, and she's just straight from Boston. Like, I guess the production of this movie stopped, like, prevented her or got in the way of her picking up her kid from school.
Mm-hmm.
And she was freaking out on the staff. And then Ben Affleck apparently heard it and was just so impressed by her loud rants and ability to be a bitch with a Boston accent that he put her in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. There's one part when she's getting interviewed by the media, I forget if I assume it's towards the beginning, where she's talking about, the abduction, and that whole thing was just improvised. Like, Ben Affleck was just like, I just want more of her on camera. So it's just sort of like, he was basically like, answer this question like you would answer that question. And it's a good little speech.
But. And calls the vigil a visual. And just,
yes, that's,
that
yeah, Ben Affleck just says, he fed her that line and she just misheard it. And that's all it was.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And I really like the, the grandma. What's Amy Ryan's character's name in this again? Why am I
Helena.
Helena, right? Yeah. Her or mother, Helene. I guess. when she calls her an abomination.
Oh, that's not her mother. That's her sister-in-law.
The aunt, the kid's aunt. Yeah. I don't know. Something about the line, you are an abomination, makes me really happy.
Oh, and it's so like she stops the room to say that. Like she dominates that line. It's great.
And I'm absolutely using that. It's like, I don't even know if you call that an insult, but I'm using that term.
Yeah.
From now on, obviously when it's not very called for.
And I assume in quiet, sobering tones.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you ever speak.
Yeah, but Amy Ryan is awesome in this.
She's very good, yes.
Yes. And due to a deal between HBO and my boner, I have to mention The Wire. Because
yep.
She's in this, and Michael K. Williams.
Yes.
And
he's Michael Kenneth Williams in this film.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah. Actually. Sorry. And the whole movie is based on a novel by Dennis Lehane.
Yes.
Who wrote a bunch of episodes of The Wire.
Yeah, I think he comes in towards the end of the series.
Yeah. But,
yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, we talked about it with Michael Clayton. There was sort of this thing around the time of when The Wire was towards the end of its production, but was still on the air, where it was sort of a thing where if you saw one person from The Wire in a movie, you knew you would see a second, because it was never sort of, you know, that movie is always being made by somebody that watches The Wire, and there's just so many good small actors that are unrecognizable on The Wire they're a very easy way to populate your movie. And that's sort of also the way things work for the character actors. If you're being seen, you're going to keep being seen, you know?
Yeah. And a director, or I know very famously with Community, I guess, Dan Harmon just watched all of The Wire in between seasons, and then all of a sudden you get a bunch of Wire characters, and it's just a show I think people love, and not are trying to bite, but, you know, want some of that magic in what they're making, if they're making something like, you know, this movie, which, you know, fits right in with The Wire very quickly, I find.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I guess we should mention some of Dennis Lehane's other work that you're a big fan of.
Is Mystic River one of them?
Yep.
Yeah.
Shutter Island.
I like Shutter Island more than you.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I thought it was a totally, totally acceptable thriller to watch one time. I really enjoyed it the one time I saw it, but never, ever care to see it again.
Okay. Yeah. You're a big Mystic River fan that we've covered.
Oh, huge. Mystic River and Mr. Griver. Fan of both.
Yeah. Anyway. We also get some Ed Harris.
Yeah. Oh, Ed Harris is amazing in this movie.
Yeah, you think so?
I mean, not that that's weird, but like even for a guy that's always really good at being intense, like, he's so good at being intense in this movie. And there's something about, I don't know, the combination of his hair and his suits and just his eyes that are just kind of frightening in this movie. When I was watching it, I was thinking, what would it be like to be a teenager parented by Ed Harris? And you've basically, like, been caught sneaking in late drunk. Like, how does that play out? I'm so, so fascinated by this.
And if you're wondering, watch the Rock deleted feature or outtakes. And then back to
that. We mention that, like, every podcast when we talk about Ed Harris. We do not mention that enough, though. Like, we should start every episode by saying, watch the outtakes from the Rock and just watch Ed Harris go to town on a phone.
It's our new theme song. Yeah. All right, well, let's get to the actual movie here. I guess it's about time. Casey Affleck.
Yes.
Casey Affleck.
Yes.
And Amy Madigan.
That's the Amy Madigan's B, the
sister. Oh, the sister.
Yeah. Michelle Monaghan.
That's the one.
Yeah.
M names. Last names. they're PIs, and they're put on the case of getting Helena's abducted 4-year-old daughter back. Mm-hmm. And things don't start well, and they only get worse.
Yeah.
How do you like Casey Affleck in this, actually? One last actor review, I guess.
It won't be the last acting review we get in this movie, but I like him. I've seen him be better, but I always like Casey Affleck, and I think he's good in this. I don't think he makes the movie dramatically better with his performance or anything, but he's good.
Okay.
Yeah. He certainly, it rarely hurts your movie to put Casey Affleck in it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And do you buy him as a PI, I guess? Private investigator actually involved with this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I don't know what a 30-year-old private investigator would look like, so you know, fake Adidas sweatsuit seems about right.
That's standard Boston, though.
I love that he's wearing Adidas shoes, but rip off Adidas tracksuits. I love that. I think that's such a nice touch.
I did not notice that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just wearing, like, the Adidas Superstar shoes, and then just his tracksuits have two stripes.
Okay, yeah, so for this movie,
he went out and bought a whole bunch of tracksuits.
Bought a bunch of tracksuits. No, just kind of a lot of twists and turns as we try to get to, you know, what really happened to the baby here.
Yeah, structurally, it's a very odd movie. Like, the first hour of the movie is, like almost an hour to the dot. I think it's about 54 minutes after the quarry scene when we, like, the scene with Michelle Monaghan, her name's Angela in the movie, in the hospital bed is basically the end of a 1 hour procedural about this disappeared, this kidnapping of the child. And then there's another hour of movie, you know,
a very sad episode of a procedural where,
yeah, exactly. It's an HBO procedural. Yeah, exactly.
And then what's the other half of the movie?
It's weird. It's very splintered. And that's one thing that about this movie that, watching it again kind of surprised me. I knew it was splintered. I didn't know, like, there is, I'm certain the first cut of this movie is like 40 minutes longer, you know? And, cause there's just some stuff that moves so quickly and, it's an episodic movie by design, but in the second half, it really, it gets pretty choppy. Just cause you know, you need to show something, some time passing a little bit, but also not too much. And you have to get a lot of things accomplished from everything they set up in the first hour. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of choppy and I don't think in a way that necessarily hurts the movie. I'm always one for playing with structure. The typical three act structure is, you know, I've seen a good enough version of that, you know, give me something new. And that's one thing I like about this movie. I think it makes the movie feel worse, but it probably makes the movie better. Yeah.
So where do you think those other 40 minutes would be?
Well, I don't know. Cause I didn't write anything down, but I know there's like 5 minutes of setup for, Patrick and Angela as PIs, like what they do. Cause normally they're not finding kidnapped children. And that's something that's a little unclear is what cases they typically do, but it's sort of like finding deadbeat dads is typically what they're doing. Okay. And there's a scene, that Affleck talks about, on the commentary, that exists but was cut for time that sort of set up the typical cases that they do. And I don't know where else there is, but just sort of there's, I guess one example that I'm thinking of is that shot of Michelle Monaghan having just gotten out of the shower. And Casey Affleck, they're
you
like,
you want 40 more minutes of her getting out of the shower.
I think she's absurdly gorgeous, but that's not my point here. yeah, no, it's just like, there's, has to be a conversation that exists other than just the line, you know, I love you, right? And then her saying, yeah, but I just want to be alone right now. Like, there's more to that scene. I'm certain of it.
Okay.
And just there's, you know, all through those in the second half, there's these various montage elements that, that just sort of feel like there's a more fleshed out version, yeah, that exists and that I would be interested in seeing, but I'm sure there was some sort of like time constraint or they didn't make the movie any better in the flow, you know, what they took away from the flow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I never really got an opinion on how you feel about this movie just overall. Like what,
I liked it a lot. When I first saw it, I watched it a couple times this week and like it less now, but mostly for reasons that have to do with sort of direction and stuff. Yeah, I always, and I still like the idea that the movie poses a bunch of questions all throughout, and interesting questions. But there's something about the execution of the movie, like I said, the sort of stuttering and stopping that hurts the flow of the movie. It hurts my general opinion of the movie. And it's just sort of, my impression of this movie has gone down a peg. I used to think it was a really great movie in a year full of really great movies. Now I think it's a really good movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that we've been able to see more of it with Argo and the Town, how Affleckian is the direction of this movie?
Well, now
Is it the same kind of problems that you have with his other stuff?
No, no, because
there's no gone baby, give fuck yourself.
No, the problems that it, like the ideas that I hated about Argo, as far as like, you know, the switching cinematography or film stocks and all that throughout the movie, and just the general aesthetic switching between Iran and in Hollywood that I mentioned not liking, that kind of happens with this movie to a lesser extent, as far as like the more documentary style footage at the beginning and in the middle and then again at the end. But it doesn't hurt the movie. I think it's sort of it's a nice sort of setup. I do find this movie so personal, and that was like, from what we know about Ben Affleck, I think this is a very, very personal movie. And, it's something that, I thought back in 2007, it was something that made the movie more interesting to me. It was just like how it was more personal than I ever would have expected. Like, you know, Ben Affleck has a 2-year-old at the time of this movie's release. Like, he's probably a new father as this movie is in production or about to be in production. Alcohol is demonized throughout the movie. Ben Affleck is a recovering alcoholic. What else is there? Oh, the media. There's so much like throwaway lines about the media in this movie. Ben Affleck, perhaps you, if you remember the early 2000s, had a tenuous relationship with the media. And yeah, there's just, also Boston.
Yeah, I was going to say you're missing, I think, the big one, but
yeah, Boston and also Casey, you know, these are things, but yeah, no, it's very Affleckian. Yeah, I think it's the best movie he's made. I think The Town is a better directed movie, 'cause I think, he learned a lot on this movie, and, The Town is just this really, really well organized, well shot, well made movie, even though it's not as good and there are problems with it I don't like. Or things about it that I don't like, but yeah, I think this is a very, very Affleck-y movie.
But I mean, besides kind of themes in his life or issues that might be personal to him, I just mean as choices as a director.
Yeah.
You see this as pretty similar.
No, not really. Like, because I mean, this looks, if you put this in The Town next to each other and Argo next to each other, they'd look different. But as far as, you know, there's more to directing than just the visuals, you know? Yeah. But the willingness to try things, to just throw things out there and see what happens, that's very much a part of Argo, visually, is very present here. Just sort of to a lesser extent, I think. I mean, partially possibly because of budgetary reasons, and also because of just wanting to make sure you're sort of staying in a comfort zone when you're directing your first film.
Yeah.
That's probably part of it in Gone Baby Gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is a fairly restrained movie. Visually.
Okay. What, yeah, just when you mentioned that, you know, he had a kid at the time, this was very personal. I guess they delayed this movie a little bit because there had been a kind of very famous,
yeah, Madeleine McCann.
Yeah. Child abduction around that time. Yeah. And yes, I'm sure with everyone, that's sad to hear, but with a very young child, I can see him being extremely sensitive about that kind of thing.
Yeah, and this movie was really, really well liked by UK critics, I'm sure that, you know, because that news story would have been even bigger, obviously, in the country where that girl is from. I think she was abducted in Portugal, but yeah. You know, they were English or British, and yeah, so I think that sort of had an effect on all these UK critics going crazy about Gone Baby Gone. Just sort of, you know, it's a movie about home that hits closer to home because of real life circumstances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't have a daughter, but there is some disturbing stuff in this movie. I mean, it's about child abduction, but, you know, we see some scenes of recent pedophilia. We don't actually see anything like that, but we get some very, you know, disturbing scenes from when it must have just happened and, you know, where it happened and the actual setting of it.
Also a dead child.
And yes. And again, that's what I mean. It just happened. And it's,
yeah.
We see a very quick shot of just the head of a child we know to be dead. And, yeah, it's not really, you know, I'm not trying to make it sound like it's exploitative of that, but it's just, it's dark and heavy when it's dark and heavy.
Yeah. And everything, like, not just that scene, but the scene before where they're both of those scenes where they're in that house, just sort of, I don't know. It's a house where, you know, stuff is happening, and there's every time they're in that house, it's just sort of a very, I've been using the word unsettling too much in the podcast this week, but, it's very unsettling. And right from Nick getting shot, when the cops go to raid the house, it's sort of like a really intense scene, and it doesn't get less intense as it progresses.
Yeah. The form of intensity changes a bit, but it's all very unpleasant and dramatic.
Yep.
Speaking of that scene, Nick, who is Ed Harris's, what's that guy's name?
Partner.
I know. What's Ed Harris's name, though?
Remy Brisson.
I love that name.
It's said so many times throughout the movie.
I know. That's why I was like, how am I forgetting this? Because I remember,
and not even just in the one scene.
Name, and they say it a bunch. Yeah, first and last.
Yeah.
So that scene, Nick gets shot, his one of the cops, and, you know, Casey goes in and sees, you know, this recently dead child, as we discussed, and the man who, you know, has just confessed to doing it. The guy that they're hunting down, who, you know, is a known child molester and has basically just said, I just killed this child. He says it was an accident, but, you know, in the circumstance, he's just admitted he killed a kid, and he's right there. And he gets shot in the back of the head at point blank range, while not really posing any for immediate threat to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But then this movie kind of goes on to be about Patrick's integrity, I guess, and his honesty and his desire to do, I guess, legally the right thing, even though it seems everyone else in this movie feels that morally it's the wrong thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even his wife very quickly, or not wife, but live-in girlfriend, says, you know, you did the right thing, you know?
In this case, for shooting the pedophile.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find that kind of at odds with, like, this shooting of the pedophile and kind of the way it's overlooked? Do you find that to be at odds with what's going to be the big moral dilemma of the movie about whether or not he gives the child back to his mother?
Like, the way he reacts in the two situations are
contradictory? I guess the way he reacts and just the fact that we spend a lot of time and we're left with this idea of, you know, did he or did he not do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
as far as, you know, reporting the whereabouts of this child, whereas, you know, shooting a, you know, unarmed person who, as I said, is obviously a bad person and, you know, shouldn't be allowed out in society, and will immediately face a, you know, child murder trial that he will lose and probably get killed in jail. But, you know, I'm not defending this guy's morality. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I mean, anytime you kill somebody, there's a moral question.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who the person is.
Exactly. So do you kind of find that there's a weird disconnect between how much struggle we are kind of forced to be put into about the shooting of this pedophile versus the very ending of the movie? Do you find a disconnect there between the two things, or does one inform the other?
Well, I mean, I think they're very different situations, because there's a lot of thought that he has time for a lot of thought in the ending of the movie.
Right.
He's in a very, very emotional situation when he shoots the guy. And I think he says later on he wouldn't shoot him if he could do it again. I think when he's talking with Remy, and Remy sort of, that's one of the many scenes where Remy starts yelling at Patrick. I don't think it's a contradiction the way he acts. I think it's just sort of, it's the difference of the situations.
Like the heat of the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's sort of, it's some, like, I mean, if you were faced, like, say, even just sitting down being interviewed and asked these questions about how you would react in situations, or even, you know, removing yourself from the situation, like, you would think longer about, is it okay to remove somebody from their mother? If you think the mother is a shitty mother, you would think longer about that before answering it than should a pedophile die, you know?
Yeah.
You would just take less time to come up with an answer.
You think so?
I think so, yeah.
Taking someone's, like, immediately killing someone like that?
I look, I'm not saying you would answer that one instantly and then mediate on the other for 45 minutes. I think you would spend a lot of time thinking about both. But if faced with, you know, like a hypothetical situation, you would think more about the mother one than you would about the pedophile.
Yeah, and child murder too, not even just pedophile.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Like, it's there aren't a lot of groups in society that, you know, would be generally put to death quicker. Just if you were to, like, do, you know, like a man on the street interview, would you kill a pedophile if he had murdered a child? Yes.
Yeah.
Would be most people's gut reaction.
Because even all the people in jail kill those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we can get to the kind of big moral question at the end that we've already touched on, too, is, you know, Morgan Freeman is a, what's it, Floyd? Is that his last name?
I actually don't remember his name.
Yeah, so he's, you know, a big police.
Doyle. Yeah, happy Boston, everybody.
Yeah, right. So Seamus Doyle is a police cop, and everyone really likes him.
No, he's played by Bill Burr.
No, he's a hero cop, and he retires and is part and was part from the get-go of this abduction. And
yeah, it's not like a classy retirement. It's sort of like a retirement out of dismay because of the way the Amanda McCready case goes.
Yeah, and just because, not that it happened, but the way that it was handled by his police force and
everything
like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's out, but it was part of his plan all along to end up taking care of this child.
Yeah.
You know, as we kind of get a deeper understanding of the abduction, we kind of understand that from the beginning it was always something different than it appeared.
Yeah, yeah.
And that people were in on it from the start. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the end of the movie is obviously Casey Affleck meeting up with him, seeing the reality of the situation and having to decide whether or not to report, you know, what's happened and get the child back to her questionable mother.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what a big part of the first half of the movie is setting up. We have to hate Helene. That's basically, like, you have to think that she's a shitty mother.
Yeah.
Like, egregiously so. And that's why the first half of the movie is all about setting her up like that. Like, oh, I let my kid go to bed hungry. You know, dropping various homophobic slurs. Yeah. Racial slurs.
Leaving her kid to go do coke. Like, she says, I was just across the hall for a few minutes and we find out she's, you know, down the street at a bar for hours on end.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's a big part of the design of the first hour, is just to make sure that nobody in the theater sympathizes with Helena.
Like, I find her insanely watchable and entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's so, like, it's amazing watching it. I have to admit, I laugh. So I'm like, she's, I don't know, something about her is just amazing in this movie. Obviously, I don't want her to parent anyone's child, but
yeah.
It's just one of those situations where the person is so unlikable, but so utterly watchable at the same time. And I don't know. It takes a very good performance to do that as well as she did, I feel.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you do in Casey's situation at the end?
I don't know.
It's a tough one.
It's very tough. Because, like, to be in that situation, I would be an entirely different person than I am. You know what I mean? Like, I worked for the legal system briefly, but only in the most technical sense, you know, like,
yeah, literally technical sense.
Exactly. And, you know, only
litigating anything,
only in a courtroom, you know, like they were already arrested. I really don't know how I'd react, because I think I would just be such a fundamentally different person if I found myself in that place, you know. So many things about me would have to be entirely different for me to end up as a PI.
Right.
Because I don't know what my end point of my career is right now, but I would bet a lot of money it is not a private investigator.
Yeah. I don't
if this podcast continues to fail, we will just start a private investigation business.
It'd be terrible.
Yeah. The MacGuffin Men, come to us if you don't want anything solved. We'll be watching God Baby God.
What do you think of Angie's decision to leave him because of the choice he made? And do you think it's okay to put someone in that position where, you know, you tell them you're going to leave depending on this decision? Because it seems like a mean thing to do to me, but I think
really, it's...
you do judge. I'm like, I don't mean judge in a really a pejorative way. I just mean you assess the people around you and how much you choose to care about them and how much you choose to spend time with them, not just in how they treat you, but the moral choices they make in their life and all the choices they make in their life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if she knows that, like before this decision's made, if she knows that she will leave him if he chooses one option, then I think it's more respectable to tell him straight up.
Yeah, you know, it is, I mean? To give a heads up.
You know, in any sort of relationship, it's always better to have clarity than ambiguity as far as feelings go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what situation it is. That's just, as a general rule, better.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I love the speech she gives, like the whole, what is her line? She says, if you do this, I will hate you if you do this and I don't want to. I like that line a lot.
Yeah.
I like Michelle Monaghan as an actress as well.
You covered that.
I'm sorry?
You covered that.
Yeah, no, but I think like that is the scene in the movie that I think she does really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, quick tidbit about Michelle Monaghan. There is a couple shots in this movie where her bangs are CGI.
Yeah, I know. That's like my second favorite tidbit of this movie.
Yeah.
First being, you saw the special thanks?
I don't know.
Oh, there's a special thanks to Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz.
That's funny.
Boston.
That's so funny. Thanks for winning the World Series, guys.
You two individuals, yeah. On your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one other little thing that I really liked, and, you know, this, as we said, that kind of question about do you leave them with someone who... Also, that kid is ridiculously adorable, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I know, so you cute. Don't care about kids that much, but I was like, I don't think anyone with a heart could look at some of these pictures of this girl and be like, that is one of the most adorable children ever.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's stupid. But anyway, yeah, that whole question about whether you leave the child with someone who isn't their family, who kind of got them through very legal and sketchy means, who you think is probably going to be a better parent to them than their real mother, who... you know, is probably not a very good mother. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the question you're left with. And, you know,
yeah.
It's the big question for him. And I think it's the one, leaving the theater, you think of, you know, what you would do, or, you know, just more vague questions of how much is family worth and what's home really mean and how can people change and things like that. Because we do kind of get a point where...
Rocky IV taught us that people can change. Right. If Rocky can change, then we can change.
Helena can change. Because yeah. We do get a point where...
I think it's Helene. I'm sorry that I've been saying Helena.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we do get a point where Beatty, Holly Flax, has kind of a freak out and says... You know, she has her breakdown epiphany about not doing coke and just getting her kid back, which probably should have happened earlier in the story. But
yeah,
we get these questions of how much people can change and, you know, who are you to make a decision for somebody else?
Yeah. You think you're better than me?
Exactly. And so, you know, we kind of get, you know, all those questions, you know, in our head for the last few minutes of the movie. And, you know, I think if you're affected by this movie, you continue to ask yourself even after the movie's over. There's just one part I really like when Casey has agreed to babysit.
Yes.
And
like the last scene of the movie.
Yeah, the very end. And Helene goes off on her date. And is it Amanda McCready?
Yeah.
Amanda's holding her little doll and says, oh, is that Maribel? And she says, no, Annabelle. And the significance being that this was part of looking for Amanda. The part of the police report said she was carrying her favorite doll, Maribel, which I take as saying, you know, this is what Helene told them. And the, you know, the takeaway at the end when she corrects the real name says to me, you know, the mother didn't even know the name of her favorite doll. And
yeah.
So we're kind of set up with the situation like, oh, this is what Casey chose. This is the reality of it. The mom still doesn't seem to be mother of the year, to say the least. You know, not really sure who's going to babysit, but making up plans to go out and pre-gaming for a blind date, which is awesome.
She's having a beer, you know?
Yeah,
that's not pre-gaming. I think that's pretty normal.
Okay. You're right, she's a great mom.
Mother of the year. No, I'm just saying, like, she does
she's
done some
she's not
shit,
playing beer pong.
Yeah.
yeah, so we kind of just left with this question, like, oh, she didn't even know her daughter's favorite doll. She's really probably not meant to be a mother right now, or at least in this manner.
Yeah.
That was just one nice little thing that brings up the question again and just kind of stirs up a lot of the moral questions that this movie's been asking throughout its runtime.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it sort of leaves you with, I mean, how does, you know, it gives Patrick a chance to change his mind is a big part of that scene, you know? Because that's where we leave the movie, is them sitting on the couch watching TV.
And you think he's going to abduct her and raise her own?
No, I don't know. I think he doesn't. But I think he thinks about it. Just because, I mean, yeah, I think it's different to let somebody abduct a kid than it is to abduct a kid.
Yeah,
that's a big difference. Yeah. Just one thing while we're on it, talking about the ending, the framing where the camera ends up, the TV is the largest thing in the shot. Did you put any significance into that?
No, I didn't really notice.
Yeah. It's just the back of the TV, but it spans basically the width of Patrick on the couch and Amanda on the couch, and they're both focused on it. And I was just, I don't have any answer for it, but that there's so much about the media in this movie. I was just wondering if you had any take on that.
No. And especially, you know, as you said, his unfavorable relationship with the media. And I was reading a lot about that. What was it? Madeleine McCann.
Yeah.
I read a lot about that case, and the way that ended up was a lot of British newspapers having to, you know, pay out money to people they defamed or, you know, raised suspicion about without any good reason. Mm-hmm. Printing retractions on their front page, having apologies on their website for a year and things like that. It's a very, you know, media story with that child abduction case. And watching this, I thought we would get more. You know, there's a couple disparaging comments about the media, as you said, but they're not really painted as terrible villains.
Mm-hmm.
And with an ending like that, kind of leaving you with that idea of, you know, maybe the effect of the media and television, things like that, it just seems a little absent. And I'm not saying this was a horrible decision to be made, but it was too late. I mean, he couldn't have been informed by that because it was so late after the fact of when he was putting this movie together. But I feel like if this movie is made a year later, you have a much different movie.
Yeah.
And I know it's based off source material, which is, you know, from even earlier than that. But I think there's kind of seeds for that. And had that case been resolved, at least to the point that it has been resolved, by the point.
Yeah, there's still, like, I Googled Madeleine McCann today, and there was a news story about it from 3 hours ago. You know, like, that's still in the conversation.
Yeah, because there's just no body found, and they keep doing those kind of age progression images of what she would look like today and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a very media one, and it's a very negative media story, and I could see Ben Affleck wanting a part of that.
But the thing, this movie, like, wouldn't get made a year after that. That's the thing. It might get made 5 years after it, but it's either happens before or 5 years later, you know.
There's just always abductions, though.
Yeah, but that was a big thing. I am not you know, the biggest follower of news, but I remember that case even outside of Gone Baby Gone. Like, I remember hearing about that summer. Yeah.
Right. All right. Yeah. I just mean to say that it seems like there is an opportunity there, knowing what we know about him, that could have been part of this. But as you said, they've probably already cut a lot from this movie. And,
yeah, exactly.
I think from what I understand, the parts of this movie that they cut, the parts of the novel that are covered in the movie are pretty faithful. There's mm-hmm. a couple of big changes, but he said if he wanted to shoot this whole novel, it would be like a 7-hour movie or something.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
Have to go. Yeah. And adding in a big media angle is not going to cut things thing. Down very well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Most adaptations you have to cut a lot.
Yeah.
Because most novels are much longer than screenplays.
Exactly. All I got for Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, well,
you got a TV take?
No, I don't. I actually think that some of the sloppiest parts about this movie are the way they just sort of throw in media criticism, like when Patrick and Angela are watching TV at the beginning and Angela says, "This is horrible." And Patrick says, "Not if you're Channel 9, you know, like just sort of these, it's all throwaway. Like they never really do anything with it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he's seen my American Victim and my Meredith Vieira. There's never anything other than I want you to be sure that I hate them to know I hate the media. Like it's of all the things this movie talks about, I think I'm the least interested in that, you know,
which is something you're normally very interested in.
Exactly. Cause I think there isn't any sort of real look at it. It's just sort of saying, "Hey guys, look at this thing. It's bad," you know? And,
yeah.
And the other thing I really hated about this movie, watching it again, was the name of the bar where things go down with Remy at the end, Murphy's Law Bar. I hate that. I hate it.
Boo. Yeah.
I yeah. So that. Bad. I wonder if things will go wrong there. I don't know. I think it's an interesting movie and it leaves you with like a lot of interesting questions, specifically like the, you know, is child abduction ever okay? Is murder ever okay? Is one that, you know, I think less about, in this movie because it's, it also asks about evidence planting. And there's a good bit of, your boy, Michael Kenneth Williams talking about, CSI is killing us out here, and how they have to plant evidence just so the juries will listen to them because they have to talk about microfiber somehow now, no matter what. Otherwise, the jury won't deal with it. And
I guess there is a bit more media stuff in there than I remember.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not news media. That's just straight up, you know, storytelling media. And, you know, the parenting and one thing I really like that we haven't really talked about is, and this seems to be the theme that most critics settled on as the theme of the movie, when it came out, was sort of the idea of what is home. It doesn't, you know, the movie's end point really sort of strays away from it. It's more about the parenting question than, you know, the idea of home, but,
yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I feel as well, but it's still an interesting question. And it's something that I like throughout the movie. Like I like Remy saying kind of out of the blue, but, saying something along the lines of, well, I've been in Boston, you know, even though he's from Louisiana originally, like he's been in Boston longer than Patrick's been alive. So does that make me more from here than you? My answer is no, it doesn't, but I think that's it's an interesting question to ask. And like right from the beginning, Casey Affleck's first monologue or voiceover monologue, there's a line, something along the lines of the things you don't choose make you who you are. And I think that's kind of interesting. And I think it's a nice sort of, two sides of the coin when you look at the ending, like, cause Patrick makes a choice, but his choice is also a non-choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not to get involved. If it's a sin, it's a sin of omission. It's what he doesn't do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's sort of a nice way that they bring it back around. And I like the thought of what makes you who you are is interesting. And the one thing we didn't talk about is the discussion that, Morgan Freeman's character, Doyle, Seamus Doyle, have that when, Casey or Patrick is still trying to, decide whether or not he's going to call it in. And Doyle basically argues that Amanda's going to continue the shitty mothering cycle. And, Patrick's argument is, he can't deal with the idea of Amanda finding Patrick one day and saying, you know, I wish I had been raised by my real family, which seems to me like a weaker argument, which sort of makes the question of the movie more interesting because I think even Patrick would say that, it's a more likely argument that Doyle is making. And I think that conversation's really interesting and really sums up the big question of the movie. And yeah, just sort of enjoy the way that that's done. How did you feel about that scene?
Yeah, I like it. It seems to me just kind of, you know, kind of playing that out, that whole question. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it is good to give that a little bit of time to sink in and look at it one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just as he said, you know, what if it's, well, I can't think of, you know, her coming up to me and saying this, and once again, it's just him, his choice is, yeah, as you said, it's a non-choice. It's about him trying to take himself out of the equation. And I don't know if that's, I think that's why his girlfriend leaves. It's, you can't take yourself out of everything and you have to have a moral choice, even if it's, you're still making a moral choice, even if you're not acting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's just kind of, it just kind of drives that home and makes that clear. And they, without, you know, making it like the architect in the second Matrix movie, they, you know, kind of give you a couple sides of the argument, but don't, you know, they let it marinate a bit, but don't stretch it out too long.
Yeah. What if the last 10 minutes of this movie had been like the last 10 minutes of The Matrix Reloaded? Casey Affleck walks into what he thinks is Amanda McCready's house, but he's actually walked into the TV room that the architect is in.
Played by Amanda McCready. Who then flies away like Neo at the end of the first one.
And then dies for all of our sins in the third one. And just like going back to that conversation that Doyle and Patrick have, Casey Affleck is wearing like a t-shirt and it's sort of like darker. It's not quite black, but it's like this really dark gray. And his dealings with Remy for about the 20 minutes of the movie leading up to that, he's wearing his black and white suit, because they talk at Nick's funeral, where Remy is wearing various grays.
Yeah, in a lot of suit. Gray.
And Patrick's wearing black and white. And the same thing happens in Murphy's Law. Patrick's still wearing that suit, basically, without the tie, and it's still all black and white. Remy is wearing a gray hoodie. And I think that shot of Remy after he's died, where they're on the rooftop, is, I mean, it's a nice, well-composed shot, but it's also sort of like a good, shows the differences between Patrick's point of view and Remy's point of view, and just the idea of various shades of gray and versus Patrick's sort of black and white, because he is sort of operating on a very black and white level. He thinks about it for sure, but the decisions he makes are very black and white decisions. And I think that's interesting. And I think it's interesting that because Doyle says, you know, I'm surprised you didn't call the cops already. Like, you came to talk to me first. Like, I think sort of that slightly more gray, but still pretty dark t-shirt he's wearing is kind of interesting.
Now he's kind of nice fallen into Remy's already understood about the world for a long time, saying, you know, that he's done police work and that he's a lot older, that there is a lot of gray and he has all this corruption in his past and still thinks of himself as a good guy, but commits crimes that he feels are, you know, for the greater good.
Yeah, for sure. And Doyle gives a bit of a similar point. Like, he says something along the lines of, you might not regret it when you get home or in a year, but eventually you will, you know, and that whole, you know, years later, I'll be dead, you'll be old, you know, that speech, yeah. That I think is interesting. And yeah, this movie does not lack things to think about for sure.
Sweet.
Yeah. And now that we've pontificated on them all,
you don't have to think about them. We did.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can think about them and tell us if we missed anything by following us and messaging us on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
At the MacGuffin Man. Yeah. But yeah, thank you for listening and be sure to check back for our next episode
on Burn Notice.
Isn't it on Rizzoli and Isles?
What is Gennaro and whatever the fuck the other guy's name is?
Franklin and Bash. You mean Franklin and Bash?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.